and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun, news, facts and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, Earth Overshoot Day, when consumption outstrips the planet's eco-resources. Proposed UK law pushes accountability for Amazon products. Rare dolphin species spotted in the Adriatic Sea. And Unilever pilots geolocation monitoring to trace palm oil supply. Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Morning, Russell.
Greetings, human. Are you going to throw more surprises my way?
Of course.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Also coming up are sustainability selection, Action Alley, and you'll be pleased to hear, Russell, the return of Fact or Fake.
Way!
We'll also be talking about Unilever, Heineken, Intel, Guernsey, Florida, carnivals, bread, fridges, dolphins, and chickens.
Wow, sounds like a great meal.
So, this week has seen Earth Overshoot Day, the point where scientists say we've used all the ecological resources the planet can produce in 12 months. As consumption grows, that day is getting earlier. However, because of COVID this year, it's been pushed back by 3 weeks. This year, the calculation estimates that we've exceeded demand by 56%, even with the pandemic. But lockdown has reduced our consumption, meaning that Earth Overshoot Day has been delayed for the first time. And I guess this is an interesting story because, as we discuss on the podcast regularly, you know, there's all manner of climate, environmental, warming issues. And this story brings it to life to say that, you know, in any given year, the amount that the planet can produce has been used up within 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, I'm kind of intrigued. So, how are we surviving?
Well, we're borrowing from the future essentially. So the Earth can regenerate and renew these resources, but we reduce the future ability.
Right.
The Earth to produce these things. So, you know, that's where we're getting it from.
I'm kind of intrigued, really. I suppose, you know, I look out, we live in a very rural area, and you know, I can go for a walk, let's say, not a drive, but I probably have to go for a drive to see it properly. And there is acres of land, tracts of land unutilized, unfarmed on, going fallow nowadays, especially with the demise of so much of the farming. Is this the planet's capability, or
if you drive a few further miles and around, especially where our office is based at ESAM in Carl Ludden Technology Park, you'll find that there are huge clay pits where the earth has been dug up over the past hundreds, 50 years, and that hasn't regenerated.
No, that's not
coming back anytime soon. So, I think that what this is saying is that, you know, the ability for the planet to replenish itself. You know, you look at the deforestation in the Amazon, how long that takes to come back, and the increasing rate of that deforestation.
So it's, on a
very local level, you might think, oh, well, that cornfield's still growing, or I can see those farmers still producing things.
But on a global scale, it's not good. It's an interesting way to present facts, I'm just the ultimate skeptic as I try to play
as we're finding out, if you present raw facts to people, it has much less of an impact. We discussed last week the fact that 137 species become extinct every day, and that's mildly interesting, but you know, we put a post up on our Green Elipod Instagram account where we said, by the time you've read this, another species will have died. And that got a much bigger response and reaction than the statement of fact.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a good way of putting it.
Sustainability selection.
Right, moving on to our sustainability selection for the week. And this week we have a really interesting resource for listeners, and this comes to you from BBC Ideas. Now, obviously, the BBC in the UK, huge broadcasting organisation, but they also produce other resources. And there's a really interesting page on their website, and we'll put a link in the show notes so listeners can go and have a look. But it's called Sustainable Thinking, and it's a series of short videos to get you thinking about sustainability issues. And there's some really interesting topics that have been posed and questions are explored. So things they ask, and these are all short 3-4 minute videos, things like, what if everyone in the world planted a tree? What if all the wasps disappeared? What if the whole world went vegan? Or maybe, and this might be you, Russell, are you suffering from eco-anxiety?
So I might be.
It wasn't me. But anyway, so recommendation, go and have a look at that. Watch some of those videos. They're really interesting and thought-provoking. Okay. So now time, let's look at some other big sustainability news stories from the week. So Heineken in the UK swaps its plastic rings for cardboard toppers. So this has got to be a good thing. The pictures of particularly sea creatures, birds and animals, turtles with the plastic rings from the top of beer cans wrapped around them don't make great pictures. But now we see that they're replacing them with cardboard without plastic.
Yep.
So I think great. Well done, Heineken.
2 points, really. I mean, one, it gets rid of the plastic, potentially making its way into the ocean. And another thing to be recycled. Well, cardboard needs to be recycled, but they quoted 517 metric tons of plastic that they prevent using. I mean, that's just not using oil or. But I have actually saw Guinness, I think it was, cans of Guinness I picked up the other day. No, other brands exist. Oh, no, we're not the BBC. We don't have to say that. But I think their plastic thing was a biodegradable thing, but it still had the ability to trap something until it biodegraded.
Which, depending on which definition of biodegradable you use, could be
20 years. Could be hundreds of years.
So,
ain't going to help a turtle with a thing around his neck.
And finally, on this one, it's interesting. They feel the need to get the name green into the product name, as we see with lots of things called the Green Grip. So. Announcing this week that major retailers and manufacturers are leading a new food waste action coalition. And we talked about this a lot in our show on supermarkets. There's a new group called the Consumer Goods Forum, who are a group of 14 major retailers and have started a coalition to fight food waste. And it's got companies like Sainsbury's, Tesco, Nestle, Walmart, Kellogg, General Mills. So some very sizable organisations. Mm. What they're trying to do is reduce the 1.3 billion tons of food that never gets consumed. I think.
Mm.
It's to be applauded. They're trying to support the sustainability goal number 12 and trying to do this by 2030.
Very, 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 very good. I heard a story a little while ago actually about food waste, which kind of the food manufacturers is one end of the problem. You know, make sure that they produce stuff so that it can be sold, and however they're going to address food loss at different harvest levels, and a lot of that's about the wonky veg stuff as well.
So
a carrot doesn't have to be absolutely straight to be a carrot. It can have funny bits sticking out of it, which we all can have a chuckle at. I remember that in my childhood, and then all of a sudden they all turned into perfect carrots. definitely need to address that. But also at the other end, I heard of a chef that was brought in to do cater a venue.
Okay.
And it was 150 high-level guests, very, very wealthy event. And they said, look, we've got 150 people. We want these three things on the menu, you know, like a lobster thermidor, a fillet steak, and, you know, high-end something else. And they said, but we want to have freedom of choice on the day. So we want 150 portions of each, and we can get rid of the 300 we don't use.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this chef converted really after that point of going, I ain't catering something like that again. That's just ridiculous.
Did he say some rude words?
He said, well, he did it, I think, and then walked away. He had been shipped to Italy to provide it. But you can't have all these people putting together to say, we'll present as good food to you as we possibly can. And then you've got a restaurateur throwing away 2/3 of its produce.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Also this weekend, another kind of good news story from a company. Intel delves into its African mineral supply chain for responsible sourcing. And we've discussed supply chains quite a lot, and mentioned that, you know, a lot of companies are saying we're going to be net zero by 2030. We're going to do all sorts of other things by 2030. But very rarely do they pay any attention to their supply chain. And it seems that Intel has been conducting trips to Rwanda to do some quite detailed looking at the extent of its supply chain and where everything comes from. So, you know, all sorts of different minerals and metals that are being used in its chips. And and what they seem to be doing is that at the source of all of these, they're kind of bagging and tagging them. So they've got traceability all the way down the supply chain. So if there is an issue in that supply chain, they can see where that's come from. If there are any human rights abuses or any practices or things they, you know, that aren't right, at least they know where they are. And I think that's a really good first step, because, you know, most organizations don't understand the full extent of their supply chain. So
commendable, and yeah, this needs to be done more. I think it's interesting, once you understand your supply chain, then you realize there's something in your supply chain that is wrong.
Yeah,
you have to be prepared to accept that your supply chain might cost you more, because they're gonna have to spend time to fix it. So this drive that we've always had for very cheap electronics, and it's become cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. I remember buying a printer back in the 80s, inkjet printer, which cost like £1,000, and now you can buy them up and throw them away. We're gonna have to get used to the fact that stuff's gonna go up in price, because we need to create a sustainable, and it's not just sustainability in terms of where you're, you know, ripping out product from the earth, but also about sustaining a viable lifestyle for people that live in Rwanda, so that they can live and grow and develop as an economy as well. Yeah. It's good.
Another one on plastic packaging now. So Kimberly-Clark and Henkel have joined the US Plastics Pact and have committed to major packaging reform. And what I liked about this was, you know, they're all the good messages about reusable, recyclable, compostable, bioplastic, all that kind of stuff. But they said by 2025. And that's got to be better than 2030, because 2025 is 4 years away, which is, you know, we mentioned these dates, 25, 2030. It sounds like a long way away, and it isn't. It's 9 years away. And again, they mentioned that they need to look at their supply chain, and they're using, and this one we'll put a link in, because I had a brief look at this, and maybe we'll discuss this more on a future show, but the WWF's plastic footprint tracker they're using, so that gives it some kind of transparency, so.
So to speak, plastic, transparent plastic.
They can't recycle the black stuff.
I thought it was an interesting one. By 2025, the average recycled content or responsibly sourced bio-based content in plastic packaging will be 30%. So that's interesting, because they realize that actually you could plug away and say, yeah, this is bio-based plastic, but actually that could have a whole raft of other problems that they're stripping, you know, forest land down so that they can plant crops, so that you can produce bio-based plastic. So that's quite a good line that they put in there as well, to the depths of thought that's gone into. So that's good news. These are small steps, but
absolutely
good.
But for every piece of good news, there's a piece of perhaps I don't know, is it greenwashing? Is it bad news? Is it the reality? Story says Carnival Corporation commits to reduce emissions by 40% by 2030. Now, we have some insight.
Dun, dun, dun.
We have some insight to the cruise ship industry because one of our employees used to work for 10 years on cruise ships. So we know. And the headline of this story goes, in 2019, Carnival Corporation achieved the remaining targets within its 2020 sustainability goals. And established, well, given that his ships have been largely in docks and not doing anything, is it really hardly surprising that it's meeting its goals? And I guess way to turn a bad news story into a good news story,
and
just see the positive of it. So it talks about, you know, reduced footprint, improving air quality and water treatment and things like that, and it's a difficult one because if your business essentially isn't running and hasn't run for 6 months and isn't likely to run for the next 6 months, it's very easy to say that you're meeting any number of different targets.
Greenwashing is I mean, there's some reasonable figures in there. They're making an effort. But you do sometimes feel that you're getting, it's not a sterling effort. It's not a 2025 effort. It's a 2030. It's not even, we've had some people saying that they've achieved net zero in 2020. Well, again, taking the COVID into account, but take everything with a pinch of salt, I guess, slightly, that's in the press. There's an element. Yeah.
10 years till 2030.
Yeah,
and they've diluted it all by 10% by taking a year out. So
it should be slightly easier.
Yeah,
but we'll see. Watch this space indeed. Again.
So extreme weathers have knock-on effect. So in the UK, the bread price is going to rise after a dire UK wheat harvest. The price of flour and bread is set to rise after what could be the worst UK wheat harvest in 40 years.
Mm.
So the extreme weather, not just the downpours and the floods we've been having, but also the long periods of sunshine, have seen the harvest go down by 40%.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like the first story where we talked about Earth Overshoot Day, and it makes it more real if you can say, oh, well, this year, you know, we've already reached the stage where the world couldn't produce enough. And this is going to make it more real because people are going to see their price of a loaf of bread go from £1, that's about $1.50 for our US colleagues, what exchange rate we're getting. That loaf of bread is going to go up. And so people are going to notice that. And perhaps that's going to cause more people to start thinking about the issues.
I mean, if you hit a pocket, what worries me is that because the supermarkets, you know, sell a lot of bread, they sell it predominantly as a loss leader. So, you know, if you think what bread might have cost 40 years ago, it's in no way gone up with inflation.
No.
Not in any way, shape or form. Yeah, yeah. Should be like £2.50 a loaf or something. Somebody will correct me on that, and please do. I'd love to know what 40 years price difference would make. But the worry is that they hide that increase and people feel no impact on this at all. But regardless of whether you believe global warming is man-made or not, the climate change is having an impact on our production rates, and it will continue to do so if we carry on as the climate changes, should be on this upward curve.
And I guess added to which, the story also mentions the Brexit impact, where, you know, in the UK
we're
gonna have to import wheat, and that's going to be subject to tariffs in the future. A new law in the UK to curb deforestation in supply chains. So this sounds like a good initiative. So UK businesses will have to show that their products and supply lines are free from illegal deforestation. The proposed law would require large companies operating in the UK to show where their cocoa, their soy, their rubber, their palm oil originated from, and more on palm oil shortly. But more about the supply chain. So this is really great that organisations are going to be responsible. They can't just move their footprint, move their carbon, move their impact somewhere else where it's not visible.
Yes.
They're going to be responsible for that wherever it is in the world.
I saw this. I mean, you and I both discussed, it'd be great if you had alongside your multicolored fat content, salt content, saturation content, is if you had this is a sustainable product down to this is a non-sustainable product, and they'd have to put something on the badge which said I'm drawing from palm oil, which is grown on Amazonian deforestation, and I'm buying other products using slave labor. I mean, I've been using hyperbole, of course, but bottom line, they'd have to change to get themselves into amber green, or they'd have to suffer the costs of their consumers saying, I'm not buying that because it's not good. You have to look hard to find palm oil on a jar of peanut butter. And at that point, you don't know where it came from unless they put responsibly sourced palm oil. We need something in labeling to say, this is a bit good, this is a bit bad.
Yeah,
from a sustainability perspective. So this is a good start. I like this.
Some research out of the US this week shows that global warming could push air conditioning demand up by 60%. And I guess the question for listeners is, think about whether you need to switch it on. The world is going to get warmer. And I guess we have a choice in the case of air conditioning as to whether we want to switch them on. But I mean, the story is saying that, higher temperatures obviously are going to push more people to purchase air conditioners in not just in the home, but in offices. And that is all powered by electricity. And in the main, that is produced by fossil fuels. One for people to think about, stop and think, I think is.
I think something else came up today. I'm working with an organization who has to get his premises ready for COVID, large premises as well. And there are ventilation requirements surrounding COVID. And the cost of increasing the ventilation to a suitable level so that enough air, fresh air is moving around, apart from putting a great strain on the equipment, it might require the purchase of more equipment or the replacement and the repair. It's likely to put the energy cost up by 40 grand for the year. And you kind of go, if every company is having to rack up to get their premises ventilated, we're going to have this really strange back turn on COVID where it's we stopped burning coal, now we're burning coal all day long because we've either got our air conditioning on or we're having to ventilate space. So we've got a bit of a problem here.
Unintended consequences, and that's what the next story is about, really. So Florida is going to release millions of genetically modified mosquitoes. The GMO mosquito, and I like this, named OX5034, as opposed to OX5033. It's a completely different mosquito, this one.
Different model altogether.
It's the upgrade. This new and improved mosquito produces female offspring that die while they're still in the larval stage. All the females will die before they're old enough to produce offspring who are going to spread the disease. So in theory, it sounds like a great idea. I guess.
Food chain.
Yes. It's the unintended consequences of this. Even in the story, I think it's the Environmental Protection Agency were asked the question, what could possibly go wrong? And they're saying, well, we don't know. We'll wait and find out on that one. A story to watch.
I mean, malaria is a huge people killer, but there are a stack of animals that feed off mosquitoes, I'm sure, the larvae and the and the fly itself or the mosquito itself. But I mean, we've had one on pandas being reintroduced, which caused a problem in the chain. But we've also heard in the past of wolves being introduced into Yellowstone National Park, which completely turned around the ecosystem because deers were raping the land of its vegetation, and wolves came in and that changed around. So it's unfortunately man mucking around with nature. They rarely know what they're doing. And I don't care how many versions they've gone through. It looks like 5,033. They got it right. This is the one that's released.
Maybe this is like an Excel spreadsheet. This is OX. So they started at A and now they're on column OX row.
Oh, hell. Mosquitoes. That's a lot of mosquito versions. Dear, oh, dear. Yeah, okay.
Another study this week shows that the Atlantic Ocean has 10 times the microplastics that we previously thought. There's been some new studies taken from different depths in the southern Atlantic, kind of north of the Falkland Islands, and they found that things like polystyrene, polyethylene, polypropylene, microparticles, there's loads more than the previous estimate. So this seems to be some research to see if a previous estimate was right. And seems like we knew it was bad, but we didn't know how bad it was.
It's 10 times worse.
It's 10 times worse. So continuing bad news story on ocean plastic, really, I guess.
And I don't know so much, you know, I don't know what you can do about it. You know, apart from we're going to get into a position of having to filter water to a microplastic level so that we can drink it, but you ain't going to stop fish swimming in it and prawns eating whatever they eat. And I've got a good idea.
We talked about that last week.
It's not good.
Don't eat pilchards, I think we said.
I mean, to be honest, the best we could do is stop using plastic that could make its way back into the ocean right now. But you can't do that either. Because plastic is quite good. It's quite a clever product, all said and done.
That's why we use it. Another one on law. Guernsey has written into law a net zero emissions target. So by 2050, it will be the law. It's their plan to commit to combat climate change. And you know, if you're serious about climate change, well, what better way to show your commitment than to actually put it in law that you are going to be net zero. And they mentioned a number of initiatives they're going to take, petrol and diesel cars being banned from 2035, renewable energy generation, biodiversity requirements and various other bits. I think if governments and countries are serious, then writing it into law shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
It kind of just proves that you're doing what you say you're going to do.
Well, who will go to jail on a 30-year plan? Who knows? Who are we going to prosecute? I think that, you know, we set policy. It's how we make people accountable for that policy and make sure that some other legislator don't come on later on and go, you know what, we won't do it by then. We'll do it by then and just change the law, which we're very good at in the UK. But you know, I'm just bitter and twisted being one foot in compliance.
And finally, for quick news, a story about electric vehicles and carbon emissions, saying that electric vehicles, you know, do have their issues, so it's not all good news on electric vehicles, and it's really about the raw materials that are used for producing the batteries. And they're saying that, you know, if you run 50,000 miles on an electric vehicle, you're going to produce more CO2 than if you were running a fossil fuel vehicle. And I think this is further further confusion in the electric versus petrol debate. And I think, Russell, we should seriously do a show on this, because it is.
Yeah, I think so.
It's such a tricky one to, you know, I was watching something on YouTube, and it was an electric vehicle channel, and it was saying, oh, we've got plenty of minerals in the world to produce 20 billion electric cars. I don't know what we're worried about. So you get these wildly differing views on electric versus petrol. And yeah, if any of the listeners have got a view on electric versus petrol, or if you've got any other, any questions you want us to investigate an answer for you, then let us know in the on social and in the comments on the show page, and we'll get to it and we'll investigate.
Yeah, one of the things that's seen, we're looking a lot at the moment of when the UK burns electricity and when it fires up more of its gas, or even turns to burning coal to generate electricity. And of course, we all share in the UK in that burn rate, regardless of what tariff you're on. So if you've got an electric car, which you charge at peak hours, then you are partially charging that off coal. Or possibly, if you think that if you weren't charging in peak hours and coal wouldn't be burnt unless you were charging your car, you're charging your car with coal burning, which is worse than driving around in a diesel, in an inefficient diesel. There is this ridiculous situation where we're not generating electricity in the right way to drive electric cars. So we're kind of pushing the problem. Oh, well, I'm not doing anything elsewhere locally, but I'm going to burn coal over here so I can charge you. It's just ridiculous.
I feel good outside my house and in my car. The fact that the power station is still there. But anyway, I think there's numbers of issues on that, and we'll get into that.
But it is very complex. Very complex when you look at where you're getting the lithium and raw materials, and just the carbon that goes into building a car, full stop. You know, the best type of car is no car.
Yeah. It's a bike.
Your best car we got. An electric bike?
Action A. Right, it's now time to take a leisurely stroll down Action Alley and suggest something to our listeners that you can do to make a difference today. Now, Russell, I'm sure, have you got a fridge?
I have got a fridge.
Good. Well, I'm not going to talk about what's in your fridge, but rather what's behind your fridge. And this is something that people rarely, if ever, do anything about. Now, the back of your fridge has a huge grill on it, which is part of the cooling system. And have you pulled your fridge out at all, Russell?
Have you? Well, Mike, funnily you should say this. And I'm not related to this article, but okay. Where I had to slightly remodel my kitchen a little while ago to move our fridge around. Okay. And we did clean the back of it.
But when you pulled it out, what did it look like?
It was fluffy.
Furry.
It was fluffy. Yeah.
So I think a simple thing that everybody can do is, you know, your fridge is running constantly using energy.
Yeah.
And you can make it run more efficiently by simply pulling it out a couple of times a year and giving the back a brush and cleaning the grill off. Just get rid of all the dirt and fluff and your fridge will use less energy.
It's an interesting one, in as much that many people build in their fridges, I suppose.
Well, and there's a challenge for the construction industry. You know, if you've got a built-in kitchen, how are you going to make it so that fridge can be easily pulled out
on rails or something?
On rails or something to make that easily accessible. I mean, I think most of them can be. You might have to unscrew it underneath from the worktop above and remove the plinth from in front and then drag it out, but it's a bit of a faff. But you know, it is a simple one. If you can do it, it all helps.
Good energy reducer, and I think elongates the life of the fridge as well. So in capital, you know, in money terms, you'll save money in electricity and in buying a new fridge early.
Right, the Delphinus delphis, not easy for me to say, an uncommon dolphin species has been reportedly spotted in the Adriatic Sea. According to research led by marine scientists at the University of St Andrews, the rare dolphin has been observed multiple times off the coasts of Italy and Slovenia. And this is a really good news story because this dolphin was believed to have been extinct. But it sits alongside another story And this is related to the Mauritius oil tanker spillage, because there have been at least 17 dead dolphins found on the coast of Mauritius. And obviously, there's a debate about whether the oil spill was to blame, but environmental campaigners are saying the deaths were either caused by the oil spill from the Japanese-owned ship or by authorities sinking part of the vessel. So, you know, dolphins, a key part of the marine food chain, and we have one really good story where the species has proved that it can survive, and another story where man has, or well, seems to be doing its best to not help it survive.
No.
So it, just two sides of the same kind of dolphin coin, really.
Yeah. Two sides of a dolphin coin. Yeah. Have we got any insight? I didn't see this story actually on the San Delphinius Delphis. See, I said it as well.
You did.
It's been spotted. Where's it come from? Why is the uplift? Is this warming of sea temperatures, or
it doesn't say
migration, or they're breeding finally?
And I think it was just they were in the region, believed to be extinct, couldn't find them, and now they've come back. And I think when I was younger, it's like the blue whale. When I was younger in the late 70s, I remember being told the blue whale was extinct.
Now you say that.
And yet now, you know,
they're thriving, actually.
Yeah.
In fact. So,
yeah. Okay. Mm. Moving on. So Unilever is piloting geolocation monitoring to trace palm oil supply. So they've got a pilot with a company called Orbital Insight in Indonesia. And what they're doing is they're using the mobile phone network to identify farms and plantations which supply palm oil to the company's supply chain. So I like this story because not only is it going back to the supply chain theme we discussed earlier, but it's using technology in a really good way, remote places in the world where there isn't a huge deal of high tech, but you know, GPS is there, so why not use it to track where things are and what you're doing. They're doing is they're saying, well, this was the origin of this piece of palm oil, and they're then tracking it all the way through their supply chain, so similar to Intel low-tech bagging and tanging of minerals. This is the same thing, but a bit more high tech.
Palm oil comes in for a hell of a rap, really, because it gets mentioned a lot. It is an incredibly versatile oil, and in terms of crop area, it is one of the in terms of producing oil out of a crop, it wipes all the others. Yeah. With the floor, when you're trying to get rapeseed oil or sunflower oil, coconut oil out, it's like three or four times the yield is fantastic. And so it's a great crop, and it's very flexible, you know, as an oil. It's really good. The trouble is, we realize it's really good, and now we're way overusing it. And so having a way of tracking it and making sure it isn't coming from deforested areas and damaging other things will put it back into the good books. I don't want to even the World Wildlife Fund doesn't say,
well, it's
stop using palm oil. What it says is let's make sure we use it sensibly.
Again, isn't it?
Balancing. It's all balance. Yeah. All of it's balance.
Fact or fake?
Okay, and so now your favourite time of the week, Russell, it is fact or fake. And we have a bit of a bovine-themed fact or fake this week. How's your cow knowledge?
Well, I know what a cow looks like.
Good. Okay, but before we get to those, let's start with this one. So, George Orwell was the first person to use the term global warming in 1943. Is that fact or is it fake?
Unless you're going to catch me with a very nuanced, it was 1944, I'm going to say fact.
Okay. That is, in fact, fake. It was first mentioned by a guy called Wallace Brooker at Columbia University in 1975. So global warming is a recent term. Okay.
Okay. One nil then. All right.
So here we are with How on Your Cow. So a single cow emits more pollution than a car in a single day. Is that fact or fake?
Are we talking average car doing average mileage with average consumption?
We are, and we're talking average cow as well.
I don't know what an average cow is.
No, but it's an average one.
I know they do have a significant impact. Is it as much as a car in a day doing average mileage? Yes, fact.
So you're saying it's a fact, a cow emits more pollution?
Emits.
It's not, it's fake.
But so many people go on about this.
Only just. A cow is almost as much as a car, but it's only just.
Oh, you okay. Rat bag.
Here we go. So, staying on the theme of cows, do cows emit more methane through belching or through flatulence?
And to our
let me say that again. So, cows emit more methane through belching than through flatulence. That's the statement. Is that a fact or a fake?
I would say. I would say that's
belching
fake.
Or flatulence. So you're saying
I would say that's fake.
So you think they're more flatulent than they are windy?
They're more farty than they are burpy. Yes.
No, it's a fact. Cows emit more methane through belching than through flatulence.
you're an unkind man.
and finally, for fact or fake, in 2003. The government of Australia proposed a flatulence tax, which was not adopted due to public protest. And this is related to cows. So is that a fact or a fake? 2003, government of Australia proposed a flatulence tax.
Wow.
Fact or fake?
Well, they've got a lot of cows. Mm. They do a lot of beef. They do a lot of stuff over there. But I will say fact.
Oh, it's not been a good week for you, Russell. That's naught out of four. That was a sneaky one. The fact is, in 2003, the government of New Zealand proposed which was not adopted. So it's partially real, but not a fact. There we go. That's the end of fact or fake for this week.
I feel I've been duped. Duped, I tell you.
And finally, before we go, Pets with Benefits. A charity that rehomes chickens said that it has had more than 52,000 requests for hens since lockdown began. Fresh Start for Hens saves birds that have reached the end of their peak laying years and would face being slaughtered. Operations Director Jackie Hand said huge demand was sparked by a shortage of eggs in shops in March. She says, this week, I'm organising a handover for 332 hens, so it's going to be a busy one, she said. I'm also trying to find homes for 800 ducks from a Somerset farm. Yeah, so they've also said they've had to introduce a waiting list for the first time. So far, we've had 9,480 people register, requesting a total of 52,106 hens. Wow.
Yes.
A bit like Chicken Run, isn't it? Potential customers for Fresh Start Hens have been trying to get around the rules that the charities have put in place.
Yeah.
They needed to see photographs of where the chickens would be living before rehoming them. The charity said that potential chicken owners would need fox-proof accommodation that could be locked at night and 2 square metres of open space per bird. People were sending us doctored images and ones from the internet, she said. Also said, a previous chicken of mine used to come into the kitchen going through 2 cat flaps and eating from the dog's bowl.
I got there's pictures on the BBC site of people lying in lounges with chickens on them and having to pet. I don't know if pets with benefits is the right phrase, but did worry me briefly as you started on that one, but it's okay.
Anyway, you can find links as usual to all the stories we've discussed on our show page at greenelephant.show. If you've got any stories or comments you want to share, then find us across social at Green Ellie Pod. And thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.